Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost conservative populist radio program. April is Confederate Heritage and History Month, and here at the Political Cesspool, we're doing our part to bring you the best guests and interviews to raise the public's awareness. Stand by now for another great installment of the Political Cesspool, and here's your host, James Edwards.
I have to beg for the forgiveness of my Confederate ancestors as I talk over the Dixie interlude here, but welcome back to the second hour of tonight's program. James Edwards here with you, along with my co-host for the moment, Keith Alexander, as we broadcast to you live this Saturday, April 11th, AM 1380, WLRM Radio and the Liberty News Radio Network. It is my honor to welcome back to the program a man that I had the opportunity to meet and break bread with last February at the American Renaissance Conference, Frank Borzilleri. Frank, as you know, is an adjunct professor of journalism and media writing at St. John's University, right there in the belly of the beast, New York City. He is the author of 5 books and hundreds of newspaper articles published in a variety of journals, including Newsday, the New York Daily News, USA Today, and many others. His latest book, the title which he is on the program this evening to discuss, is entitled Lynched, A Conservative's Life on a New York City School Board. Frank, welcome back to the show.
James, a pleasure to be back, and I don't think I'm violating any New York or Tennessee laws if I wish you a happy Easter.
No, well, none that I know of. You never know.
Well, you'd be violating the unwritten laws of the school board I was on by mentioning any holiday other than Cinco de Mayo and Kwanzaa.
Well, can you mention Martin Luther King Day?
Oh, you certainly have to mention it, but it has to be in a positive light. God forbid you oppose that holiday on my school board.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk more about that, but before we do, I want to wish to you and yours as well, Frank, a very happy Easter. We made mention of that at the beginning of the show, and it is a very blessed and special weekend for our people. But let's get right to it, Frank. You know, you were kind enough to send me a copy of the book, which I digested, and you basically confirmed my wildest nightmares about how bad it could be in public education and the politics of an ultra-liberal school board that, such as you served on in New York City. Frank, where do we start? I mean, you know, and first of all, let me ask you this question. Is there some invisible force field that keeps this politically correct dogma within the confines of New York, or are these liberal policies that we find permeating education susceptible to being spread to other areas?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is definitely nationwide, but there's two things that were unique about my situation. I think anything that happens in New York is automatically a national issue because, you know, New York's really the capital of the world, the media capital of the world. And the second thing that was unique is frankly, there was really no one like me anywhere else. Where I was on this school board, and I was willing to take a stand, not just as a conservative, but really what I really am is a Eurocentric libertarian. I'd voted against all federal funding for these ridiculous bilingual programs and multicultural programs. I had spoken out against multiculturalism and bilingualism in general, and also as far as spending tax dollars on it. And you know what you have to understand is that here in New York City, they were just not ready for someone like me. They couldn't believe that someone would actually speak out against these things and take a pro-Eurocentric point of view. And in that sense, the press loved it because they love a good story, but the political establishment, the education establishment, and my own school board was bestial in their attacks on me because they really viewed one voice of dissent as one too many. They just could not tolerate a dissenting voice, even though I was outnumbered on this 9-member board. And just for the edification of your audience, the school board members are all elected. And I was elected overwhelmingly by a conservative white area. And most of the other school board members were also whites from these areas, but they were left-wing They were politically correct, and they were more concerned with sucking up to the left-wing forces on the school board. And if I can, I'll just give you, I can get, like you said, where do we begin? I can give you 100 examples, but I'll give you just two examples. I had put a resolution on the school board that would mandate that our curriculum would state that Western culture was superior to all other cultures. And I was very specific. I said that things like George Washington is superior to Che Guevara. Freedom of religion is superior to religious oppression. Capitalism, free market, is superior to communism. And they voted against that.
Of course.
They also voted against adding, after I tried to remove anti-American multicultural lies in the school board refused to add books that were pro-American. Books, a biography of George Washington, the school board would not add it. A book on the history of religion in the United States, school board would not add it. So they were a bunch of left-wing, white, liberal hypocrites.
Well, Frank, I want to say this to you and to the entire listening audience, truly around the globe tonight, as this show has listeners, regular listeners, from all ports of call. I want to tell you why I respect you so much, Frank. First of all, it's not just because you speak out. So many people now don't dare speak out. If they speak at all, it's within the comfortable confines of their private residence. But not only do you speak out publicly, you took the battle to the belly of the beast. You battled this in the trenches. You got your hands, feet, face, you got everything dirty and bloodied, and we share scars. And I tell you, I hold the utmost amount of respect for people who actually go out there and get into this fight in the real world. But I want to talk more about some of the specific things, some of the specific occurrences that you experienced in a moment in the next segment. But before we do, and before this next break comes up, I want to turn it over to Keith Alexander, who's about to have to step out to ask a quick question of you. Keith?
Sure. Yeah. I was just going to ask you, I had a brother-in-law that lived in New York probably back in the 70s, and he made a comment that has stuck with me through the years. He said, Keith, he said, between gay Greenwich Village and the Ufidi side, they're about to stamp out heterosexuality altogether up here. And this was back in the 70s. What makes New York so intensely left-wing? You know, it's a puzzlement to the rest of the nation, particularly red state America, because we just can't understand how rational people could hold these type of positions.
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I do get that question all the time, exactly how is it that I blend in as a lifelong New Yorker? And the truth is, New York has traditionally been always a democratic state, and I mean going back to the 30s, 40s, 50s, but not left-wing the way you mean. New York was always democratic in the sense that it was a big union town and it voted for Democrats. But as far as the real left-wing bent, I think that that is a cultural thing that comes out of Manhattan. It is largely because New York is now whites are a minority in New York, so the voting trends are always going to be left wing. And you know, quite frankly, even the pockets of whites, middle class whites, sure, the average citizens are people who would think like me, but they're those who hold office, and I'm including so-called conservative Republicans in that, they're cowards. When I was going through, as James described, getting my hands bloodied and taking all these attacks, there was not one conservative Republican elected official who came to my defense. And these are the people who represent the conservative whites who supported me. And I can't tell you, in addition to getting the comment of, how in the world could you have gotten elected in New York City? Well, the specific answer to that is that I ran in a conservative middle-class white area. There are pockets of those areas in New York. But what I got just as frequently is, you're a guy who says out loud what people think privately, but nowadays are too afraid to say publicly. There was a school board meeting. Well, there were several where I needed police and security escorts all the way home. You know, the cops were literally following me home in the cop car to make sure I got home safely. And, the cops would tell me privately that they agreed with everything that I was saying up there, that, we have to put an end to this nonsense. So, the answer to your question is that It's not just New York. It permeates the country. You cannot tell me, and I can't speak to local elected officials down south who I don't know, but there is not one conservative Republican member of the United States Congress who would officially take the stands that I took on the school board, because they're generally a bunch of cowards.
Well, you know, Frank, you echoed a sentiment that I read, and I'm thankful to be able to read it every day. We're going to talk about that after the break. We talk more with Frank Boyce Larry about his latest book. Don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Now, there's a native New Yorker, Mr. Frankie Valli, and you know, we have had one of the four seasons on this show. We have everybody. You never know who you're going to find on the Political Festival. You've got to tune in every show to find out. Continuing on this evening with Frank Borzilleri, former school board member, author, professor, and we're talking about his latest book, Lynched, A Conservative's Life on a New York City School Board. And before we get into some of the more specific examples of really the treachery that you were faced with, Frank, I want to give you the opportunity to let people know how they can order the book, and certainly we will revisit that before your interview is concluded.
Yeah, well, thanks, James. There's actually a pretty good deal. The publisher would like me to tell your listeners about the publisher's website, and I appreciate you put it on your home page. Publisher's website is culturalstudiespress.com, all one word, culturalstudiespress.com. And those who buy from the publisher, I will personally autograph the books. And there are some special deals on there for some of my previous books on race also. Of course, listeners can buy the book from Amazon, but those I cannot sign. So either way, culturalstudiespress.com, check it out, and I'll be happy to sign the books for you.
And if you're driving around in your car right now listening to the radio, folks, and you just can't remember that website, I know you've got our website bookmarked, and as Frank said, just visit it, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and they're prominently featured on the homepage. You'll find a link to Frank's publisher, and you need to get the book. And if you haven't yet decided to get the book, we're going to make sure that you make up your mind to do so before this interview is over. But Frank, I got to ask you, native New Yorker, are you a big Four Seasons fan?
I'm sorry, James?
I was just saying, as a big native New Yorker, are you a Four Seasons fan, Frankie Valli and the boys?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're from right next door in New Jersey.
That's
and
right.
Actually, I'm a little young to remember their heyday, but my mother's a big fan of Frankie Valli, a fellow Italian.
Fair enough, fair enough. I just couldn't avoid the congruences there. Had to ask. But anyway, back on topic. All right, I want to give people some specific examples of what you were faced with there, Frank, and you've already made some references to it, but let's talk about your attempt, and this is straight from the publisher's note, but I couldn't avoid it. You attempted to add books such as Paul Revere's Ride, the very famous title by Longfellow. That wasn't good enough, but Jumbo Means Hello, the Swahili alphabet, was just fine. Am I right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, and it was very interesting because the one controversy came right after the other, and I'll give you a little background on it. There was actually a chapter in the book, Lynch, devoted to each of these. I had found some books that were objectionable, and that's putting it mildly. They were anti-American. They were multicultural. And my attitude was the taxpayers are paying for this, and if they knew what their tax dollars were going for, and again, we're dealing with primary grade school children, that the taxpayers would oppose a book that made Columbus look like a madman, that made a curriculum guide, that made Washington look like a terrorist. So I said, let's start using the tax dollars wisely. And the school board opposed me what they claimed on two grounds. The first was that these books were just so wonderful, and how could a censor like me want to take these wonderful multicultural books out of the school? But the second reason that they claimed they were opposing me was that you simply are guilty of censorship if you remove books because you do not agree with the ideological content. And I said, all right, fine, if that's the way you feel. A month later, I proposed adding these books. And as you said, we had books called Tiki Tiki Tembo, Crowboy, Jumbo Means Hello, the Swahili alphabet, and that was fine. But when I attempted to add Paul Revere's Ride, Columbus and Cortez, Conquerors for Christ, Russell Kirk's America's British Culture, a biography of George Washington, they wouldn't add them. And I said, well, wait a minute. What about this whole notion of banning books because you don't agree with the ideological content? And suddenly they were objecting to the fact that Daniel Boone, Man of the Forest, showed Indians dragging white girls into the woods. Well, they didn't want that, so they banned that from the schools because they're not only left-wingers, but they are unprincipled hypocrites. So they simply banned these pro-American books after a month earlier chastising me for wanting to for objecting to multicultural books.
Well, Frank, as you know, hypocrisy and double standards reign on the left side of the political spectrum. I mean, it is perfectly all right for them to be culturally prejudiced against our history and heritage and heroes, but by God, if we have, if we don't think it's all right to put, Che Guevara ahead of George Washington, then that's well, that's just textbook racism, I guess. But,
right. And just to make it clear for your listeners, and I know you know because you read the book, that the overwhelming majority of people that I chastise in this book are whites who themselves live in safe, lily-white neighborhoods.
Oh, absolutely.
So they're out there promoting integration, multiracialism, multiculturalism, and saying that I'm sort of a Nazi for being a Eurocentrist, and yet they themselves live in these safe, lily-white neighborhoods, and they were a bunch of hypocrites who tried to hide their left-wing voting records from their white middle-class normal neighbors.
Well, I said it in a segment preceding this one. I would rather be in a foxhole with more D's or Abe Foxman than people like Rick Warren. I just, not to say that Foxman and D's in and of themselves are not, you know.
We've been working hard, babe. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. One more segment with Frank Borzilleri, the former member of a New York City school board, professor and author, and good friend of ours here in the political cesspool. And I tell you, you know, the culture that produced men like Robert E. Lee and Davy Crockett has become almost nothing more than a distant memory. And we are a people now that are short on heroes in this time of rampant cultural Marxism. But I say this, and not to blow smoke, I think Frank Borzilleri is a hero of our people. He is a man that is academic and credentialed. He is a man who ran for office and once elected did not sell out, but instead fought like a junkyard dog. And he's written a book about it, and we want you to buy that book. Of course, it's titled Lynched, A Conservative's Life on a New York City School Board. We're going to get Frank to give the official website one more time as to how you can buy that book before we run out of time with him this evening. But if you can't remember anything else, just go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. We have a link there on the homepage for a couple of more days. Now, Frank, before we went to that last break, you were talking about how the school board was funding programs for illegal third world aliens. You tried to stop it. You also talk about how a lot of children in that school district could barely read and write English, but yet the school board wanted to fund, and they did fund, bilingual education. Now, one of the most basic prerequisites for citizenship in the United States is that you are able to read, write, and converse fluently in English. So the fact that the school board was doing everything they could to promote bilingual and pander to the third world education of illegal aliens is treasonous, in my opinion, and yet it was absolutely kosher up there, was it not?
Well, of course, and you know what you have to understand is that school board members are not primarily educators; they are primarily politicians. So their priority is not doing the educationally appropriate thing; it's doing what in their minds is the politically appropriate thing. So, I mean, they would laugh at the idea that somehow, by promoting bilingual education, they were promoting illiteracy, and they were keeping not only immigrants, but they were wasting money on programs and materials that were keeping children from learning English. They don't care about that. What matters to them is sucking up to and catering to the left-wing alien advocacy groups. So to the extent that they secretly knew that I was right, they didn't care. I mean, what mattered to them was just, you know, promoting anti-Americanism and multiculturalism, while, of course, to repeat, shielding themselves and their families from that specter by living in safe, lily-white neighborhoods. But indeed, children in the New York City public school system can barely read and write in English, and certainly immigrants have a problem with English. And the way that you learn English is the old-fashioned way, called immersion. Now, when my parents went to kindergarten in the New York City public school system, they were born here, but they were raised in homes where English wasn't spoken, so they only learned English when they went to school because they were immersed in it. no bilingual education for the Italians, the Germans, the Hungarians. They had to learn English, and their English was fine within a couple of months. But now it's the opposite. If you have a Hispanic surname, you're automatically put into a bilingual class, and the reason for that is to maintain your Hispanic culture, and also it's a jobs program. It's what Tom Sowell referred to as reverse Darwinism, survival of the unfittest. The children of immigrants cannot speak English, so they are given bilingual education. Well, that keeps them from learning English, so that further justifies the program. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more bilingual education fails, the more it is claimed to be needed. So you have a circle. You have an unending cycle of children who can't speak English. And that is aside from the fact that they don't belong here if they're not here legally. And the school board continually funds programs that invite illegal aliens into this district. Said, how can we cure the overcrowding when you continue to fund programs that makes it enticing for third world aliens to come here illegally if they have to?
Well, you know, Frank, that was very eloquently put, I must say, and to echo what you have just stated, one of the things we say often on this program is that when the voice of liberty and freedom is spoken, it's spoken in English. And, of course, unfortunately now, in today's society, to insist that those who are here illegally be forced to learn English, well, that is, in fact, a racist notion. But one more thing, Frank, and then I'm going to get you to plug the publisher site one more time. Again, I couldn't recommend or endorse any more highly, ladies and gentlemen, this book. We want you to buy it for a lot of reasons, not the least of which would be to support a man who has actually walked the walk when it comes to fighting this culture war on behalf of our people. But in fighting this war, Frank, I have seen it because this show has become quite renowned, and the more high-profile you are, the more vehement the attacks are going to be against you. But those who are against Western civilization and against our culture are never content to combat us in the court of public opinion. They will do, well, one of the old sayings from their own lips, by any means necessary,
right,
even if it's extra legal. What are some of the attacks you had to endure as a member of the school board up there, Frank?
Well, the attacks I endured were, you know, the ones that your audience can pretty much guess. You know, racist, Nazi, book banner, Navarola, you know, the Italian cleric who wanted to ban books, xenophobe, nativist, you know, all the nonsense. But, you know, on an optimistic note, and I think what your listeners will find gratifying is that in the final chapter of my book, Lynched, I document what happened at election time. When, having stood for all of these things for my three-year term, it was now time to run for re-election, which I did twice, by the way. And when it came time to appeal to the voters, the other school board members would run and hide from their voting records, whereas I stood on my record and I promoted that which I said. And the press, to its credit, you know, because we generally regard the press as being anathema to or against someone like me, but they gave me and they gave conservatives, they gave Eurocentrists our due, where in the next election there were 17 candidates, and I got three times the votes. I finished first, and I got three times the votes as the second-place finisher. So I not only finished first out of 17, but by a landslide, by, as you say, by standing on these issues and by being proud of them and promoting them at election time, while the others ran from their voting records. So what that tells us is that people who think like us, we know that we have the support of the silent majority. And if only we had some more people in elective office, we could move positively on policy. That's why we're defeated, not because we don't have the majority of Americans thinking like us, but those who attain power are more concerned with keeping power and catering to and sucking up to the political thought police than doing the right thing. And I read a whole chapter on that.
Well, you did, and I'm holding that book in my hands right now. And folks, it can give you hope. I mean, yes, on one hand, it sort of punctuates the dreariness. It pretty much unveils that everything that we've imagined in our darkest dreams are true, but that you can get elected. You can win and you can make a difference, and Frank Borzilleri is one of those men who has done just that. And I say again, we haven't really scratched the surface as to what he endured or scratched the surface as to the contents of this book, but the book is again entitled Lynched, A Conservative's Life on a New York City School Board, authored by Professor Frank Borzilleri. I got a nice picture of Frank looking rather imposing in front of public school number 77 up there in New York. Frank, we're about to go to break, but let them know one more time how they can get this book.
Yeah, thanks, James. The publisher's website is culturalstudiespress.com, which I appreciate you put on your homepage. That's all one word, culturalstudiespress.com. The book is Lynched, A Conservative's Life on a New York City School Board. And if you order from the publisher, you will get a nice personalized autograph from me. And there are some good deals on there, too. So I really think that your listeners will appreciate and enjoy the book.
Well, we hope that you enjoy it, too, ladies and gentlemen. And listen, if you've enjoyed this interview with Frank Borzilleri and you think some of your friends and family members should listen to it, they can go to our archives page immediately after this broadcast and catch the show on demand. And we encourage you to encourage them to do just that. Frank, thanks for your time. Thanks for your service. Thanks for living on the front lines.
Well, James, I love doing your show, and I look forward to coming back, and I wish you all a happy Easter. Thanks for having me.
Happy Easter, Frank. We'll be back with more right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We got to get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
And welcome back to the show, everyone. As you no doubt remember, we just heard from Frank Borzilleri. Buy his book by visiting our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Joining me now in the studio here in Memphis is our good friend and fellow co-host, Eddie the Bombardier Miller. Eddie, how's it going?
It's going so good, it couldn't hardly be better, Mr. James, that's for sure. Can you hear me okay?
You in tonight, but as I told Keith, under these unfortunate circumstances, I wish that the situation was better. We're kind of playing co-host musical chairs tonight. We found out, regrettably, a few minutes before the broadcast this evening that Winston Smith's father-in-law has fallen gravely ill, and he had rushed off to the emergency room to be with his family, which is what we would expect and want. And I appreciate you and Keith coming in on such short notice to the studio tonight to help spell our ailing brother, as Bill Rowland is out of town this week in Texas. So you and Keith standing on the watchtower tonight, Ed.
Well, I wished I'd have been here earlier for you. Really
no
do.
Problem at all. Well, what'd you make? I know you were kind of waiting in the green room there, so to speak, as we interviewed Frank. What'd you think about what he had to say?
I thought he was really great. The man has to have a lot of courage to do what he did, and I was thinking of a few things. I know we had somebody on the cesspool not too long ago, and they were talking about, I believe it was Karl Marx, you know, James, and he said that Karl Marx knew that if you could separate one generation of children from their roots, from their heritage, you could mold them pretty much the way you wanted to. And it's my opinion that the reason that the people that hate us, when I say us, I mean, you know, the Anglo-Germanic Christians, were hated by the entire world. They want to separate us. They want to destroy our heroes and to kind of make us, you know, want to be black. You know, but all the sports heroes are black now. You know, the Hollywood is, like I think y'all were talking about on the earlier segment as I was coming home, before I got home, when I was listening to you on the radio like I always do. You know, Jews controlled all of Hollywood. And all the movies, you know, are pretty much anti-Christian. All of media is anti-Christian. They make white Christian males out to be buffoons. And all of our heroes are made out to be you know, like criminals. Matter of fact, you've probably heard me say it, James, that my favorite insurgents, they're always talking about the insurgents in Iraq and Afghanistan. Hey, my very favorite insurgents was Robert E. Lee, Nathan Bedford Forrest, and George Washington and Patrick Henry.
Well, you know, you can't beat that quartet, and we're going to be talking more about Nathan Bedford Forrest in particular in the third hour. Of course, the third hour of each broadcast that we air during the month of April will be dedicated to Confederate History Month, so we're excited about that, and we are going to have Nathan Bedford Forrest's historian, a local Memphian, Steve McIntyre, on the show in just a few minutes. But you're right, Ed. All of our heroes, the heroes of our people throughout antiquity, are basically nothing more than evil practitioners of genocide. They were bigoted. They were this, that, and the other. They had no redeeming qualities. And because that lie has been repeated for so long by so many, it's really starting to set in the mindset of the younger generation, my generation, the generation right behind mine. Of course, I'm 28 years old, thankfully I didn't fall for all that politically correct dogma. But you listen, you know, there at Brown University, this Ivy League school, supposedly the top notch of American universities and academia, just this week, Ed, the board of directors, the student unions, the professors, the governing elite of Brown University, officially on the school catalog, the school calendar, I should say, renamed Columbus Day for Fall Weekend. And not only was that, they didn't stop there. They had to go on and put on record why they were taking Columbus Day off of the school calendar, because they said, as a, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the exact wordage in front of me, but I have read it several times, including from Brown's official website, because he was a white supremacist that engaged in murder of the Native Americans and represented a philosophy that is not congruent with Brown's principles. So there you have it. That's what Christopher Columbus is being taught about. That's what you learn about Christopher Columbus at Brown University, this Ivy League school. And he is no longer good enough to make it on the school calendar. Christopher Columbus.
Well, and you know what, James? You and I know, and probably most successful listeners know that there's probably been no greater Christian than Christopher Columbus. The big reason he went on his voyage and his, you know, exploratory mission was just like the original pilgrims. They stated before they even left that they want to do their exploration for the greater glory of God and to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ to all the heathen and the savage. They wanted to civilize them and deliver them from this paganism. And they did just that. And everywhere that our Anglo-Saxon Germanic ancestors traveled in the world, they brought nothing but good. They brought, you know, the culture. They brought medicine, religion to the heathen and the savages. All the other races benefited greatly from us, be it South Africa, what used to be Rhodesia, the United States, South America, everywhere that our white race has traveled, from time immemorial to right now, the other races have benefited.
And that's exactly the truth, Ed. That's just the cold, hard truth. Now, you know, have members of our extended family ever done things that were perhaps abhorrent? Well, I'm sure that they have. Who hasn't? I'm not saying that we are a culture without some sin, but I will tell you this. The attributes that we have brought to the world outnumbers whatever grievances we may have committed 1,000,000 to 1. And, you know, one of the things that, look at America, I mean, for goodness sake. Look at the advances this continent that our forebears brought. And, you know, of course, the only thing we're ever taught about now is that every white man throughout history was a racist and an oppressor, and that we stole the Indians' land. I want to set the record straight on that very quickly before this segment runs out. When the Europeans got here, they became European Americans after colonizing and settling this wilderness, this wasteland. There were barely enough Indians, or Native Americans, whatever you want to call it, barely enough of those people to even sit on the land. I mean, they were squatters, You know, let's face it. And we're taught that all our people did was come over here and rape, rob, and pillage the innocent Indians who were just here to give us a helping hand and teach us how to plant corn and this, that, and the other. But, you know, let's not let the facts get in the way of that fairy tale. Let's not let facts get in the way that the Indian tribes, and it wasn't some sort of united Indian culture over here. It was a hodgepodge of hundreds of different tribes, sparsely populated, that engaged in genocide against each other and against the Europeans when they settled this country. And so did we fight back? Did as in Doctari, did the stronger animal win out? Well, yeah, they did. But, again, it's just a fairy tale to believe that the Indians were just sitting here welcoming us with open arms, and then in our oppressive nature, we did everything evil you could think of. In fact, quite the contrary is true, and I dare say that those of Indian descent that are still here are in much better position now because of our arrival in the New World than they would have been had we never come at all. We you know, as Pat Buchanan said on this show, and as he said in his columns, we've heard the grievances. Where's the gratitude for all the goodness that our people in our Christian faith have brought to the world? But, of course, you'll never hear about that. You'll never hear about the savage nature of some of these tribes and the way that they committed genocide against each other the same way they try to do against us upon our inception. And but you know, it doesn't matter, because what's politically correct is what's preached as truth today. And the media and in academia, and certainly at Brown University, where one of the greatest heroes, a man who makes normal people swell with pride, Christopher Columbus, this man is no longer good enough. Even though his day is on the official federal calendar, right there with God himself, Martin Luther King Jr., but nevertheless, Christopher Columbus no longer good enough to be celebrated, or even remembered for that matter, at Brown University, unless you remember him as some sort of demonic butcher of the benevolent environmentalist Indian people. And, Ed, you know, I'm sick of it. I am sick of it.
Amen. You know, James, as early as the Second World War, you know, my father fought in the Pacific. And when he was in, when they were in New Guinea, and we're talking about this, what, 65 years ago, there was still cannibalism going on down there. In headhunters in New Guinea. This, and like I say, this has been 65 years ago. They may still have some in the jungles of New Guinea.
Hey, Ed, sit tight. Gotta go to break. We'll be back.
Thank you, dude.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They call the right.